Hi Hira, how you doing? Long time no see. Yeah.
Hi Hira, how you doing? I know that you're hating on me. The more that you hate on me, the more that I'll do my thing. Hi Hira, how you doing? I know that you're hating on me. The more that you hate on me, the more that I'll do my thing.
Hi Hira.
Well, welcome to the first edition of Hi Haters. I am Uncle Chats. I am joined by Casey Smith. She's in New York. We are so excited that you tuned in for our very first episode. Casey and I, it feels like we've been waiting for this moment for literally months, but it's only been actual correct use of literally like 2 weeks.
I feel like it's been years at this point. Like, it feels like when we talked about this at lunch and Dave greenlit it, it was like last year at some point, but it really was only 3 weeks ago. But all of that to say, we made it, chaps. We made it. We're here. Hi Haters is officially off the ground and running.
And I'm surprised it took me so long to fuck it up where I didn't let people know before, because I live my entire life out open on the internet. People know about my wife, my kids, and everything. And so having a secret was so tough for me, but we did it. We made it. Now we're here. You're going to be hearing episodes twice a week on this feed and on the radio show. I can't wait, but let's just get into it. No more waiting. It's actually here, so I'm excited. But although we've known each other for 3 weeks now, or about a month, I guess, but we don't really know a lot about the background history. So we want our listeners to kind of learn a little bit at a time, and we'll start with Casey with a little childhood happy from her history.
I don't know if this is a happy story, but you asked me to pick a defining moment in my childhood. Mm-hmm. Now, there are a lot. There are some that I'm going to save for like late night weirdness, like kind of when I figured out, you know, about sex and all of those things, because I feel like those are late night conversations. Right. But one of the things that I really remember growing up was in junior high, and I got my worst nickname I've ever been given of all time, but it was a defining moment. So they called me Macy, because I looked emaciated. Again, this is not a happy story, but keep this in mind, okay? So they used to make fun of me all the time. They said I would like, they told me to stand sideways and stick my tongue out and I look like a zipper because I was so skinny and all these things.
Oh, man.
However, but here it is though. So I was always very upset about it. They called me Macy, emaciated, whatever they, Macy, Casey, anything. For years, I was like, I am going to get these fuckers back. One day, they're going to look back and feel really bad that they called me all of those names. So when I came back to school, the class reunion, I guess, if you call it that, like my freshman year of college, and I was no longer looking emaciated, it was this defining moment of I was made fun of my entire life. It's the worst nickname I've ever been given. And no, I will not go on any dates with any of you. I feel like it's a sad story that turned happy, chaps.
That's a super happy story.
It turned happy.
Reminds me of what's the movie where she goes to the Chernobyl and she finds out she's the princess and she comes back and everybody at her high school. I think it was Hilary Duff.
Princess Diaries. Yeah. Wasn't it Anne Hathaway?
Yeah.
Who, by the way, I can't stand Anne Hathaway, but it was a good movie.
It was a good transition.
I didn't find out I was a princess, but I did eventually gain weight and did not look sick anymore.
So you basically lived every single late 90s, early 2000s movie that was destined for like teenagers, like 10 Things I Hate About You.
Yes.
She's All That. It was very, very popular to have movies exactly like that during that time period.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a moment for me. I remember thinking life could never get any worse than it did in junior high because the boys were so mean to me and the girls were mean to me. And then, you know, full circle, getting called Macy my entire childhood life or whatever ended up playing in my favor because I got to be very mean to those people. And that is vindication, Uncle Chaps. That's vindication.
I had the same type of thing, but I was one of the bullies. Like, there was this girl that I
Oh, so you were the guy calling me Macy?
No, I was very skinny too, a very skinny fellow, but I used my humor to deflect it. Like, I used my humor as a weapon against other people a lot of times. So there was this girl that I went to school with. She was red hair, and I gave her the nickname FPL, which meant freckled pussy lips.
Oh, my God.
And she found out what she was named, like what the name meant, and it like ruined her life, basically. And we weren't friends for a long time, and it was really ugly of me because she actually was the one that taught me how to drive a stick shift in a car because we were kind of friends. She was like best friends with my girlfriend, and I called her FPL, like, all throughout my sophomore and junior year. She taught me how to drive a stick shift, and I was still keeping that nickname going until she found out what it meant. Well, years later, we reconnected on Facebook, and she found out that I had a red-haired daughter. And she was like, I hope your daughter never goes through what you put me through in high school. And it ruined me for days. I thought about it. I was like, I can't believe I did that to somebody. I saw my daughter walk in and I like hugged her. I was like, please let there not be a chaps in your high school whenever you get there. I'm so nervous about it even now.
That's the thing, is like all of my guy friends that were so mean to girls, whether it was in high school or college. And like, look, what happens in junior and high school at the time feels like it's the worst thing ever. In reality, it means nothing. Like, you go to college and you're like, I don't care about any of those people anymore. But they are all going to have daughters. Every single one of them is going to have to watch their daughter, hopefully not be treated the same way. But I always tell them that, like, you can treat girls like this now, but just know one day it's not going to be funny when those girls are crying. And again, that's vindication, but I've gotten over it. The Macy nickname is now funny, but a very defining moment in my life, chaps. The haters started at a very early age for me.
I imagine you're going to drive through on the Barstool bus to one of the many tailgate events that you go to this Saturday, see one of your old high school classmates with a skinny daughter and be like, look at your skinny bitch daughter. Was it just me? Maybe she should eat some steak and potatoes.
Oh my God. Like, I you talk about like dads protecting their daughters. So my little sister, who's 3 years younger than me, she was also very, very thin as a kid. Like, my dad would give us chocolate shakes with ice cream and peanut butter and everything to just try to put some weight on us. But both of us were just very skinny kids. And we were at the swimming pool one summer and we were both on the diving board, and this fat kid was in the pool and he was like, oh, here comes the anorexic diving contest of America. And of course, Allie and I just jump in and, you know, we're just like not paying any attention to it. I was probably crying in the corner. Who knows? My dad, and I think we were probably in elementary school.
Yes.
My dad, who is not in elementary school, obviously a grown ass adult,
story.
Gets up on the diving board and waits for the fat kid to get on the other diving board. And he just starts screaming really loud, watch out, all the water's gonna get out of the pool with this fat ass. Like, oh my God. He probably didn't even say fat ass.
Rescue.
He probably said fatso, because my dad would never call a child a fat ass. That's just coming out of my mouth. However, I remember looking at my dad that moment being like, I'm just so glad I have a knight in shining armor like my dad to take down the fat kids at the pool for me.
Yeah, man.
So that's one of the you best understand.
Part. Whenever you can nut up and be like that dude for your daughters, it's such a great experience. It's lovely. All right, well, that's a personal story. Oh, I got to tell mine.
I was about to say, like, we can't let the, like, it ended up being a happy moment, but this is not, you know, the personal moment I just want to end this segment on, chaps. We got to have a happier moment than that.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the time that I was in the bathtub as a young buck. I've always been a bath guy. I don't know if you know that about me. I'm a bath guy. I hate taking showers. I prefer to take a bath any day over a shower. I just like to.
Do you wash your hair in the bathtub?
Oh, yeah. It's how I
stay. Like, you lay back and dunk your hair?
Oh, I lean forward. It's how I stay limber. It's basically like a little bit of yoga in there.
You lean forward?
I lean forward, yeah.
You don't get soap it all in your eyes doing that?
It's how I've always done it. I guess I just adapted. I do have a towel close by because I also hate having soap near my face a lot, because I sprayed myself in the eyes with WD-40 when my dad left me in his ranchero on a fishing trip. And so I was hanging out in the bathtub. I was probably 6 years old or so, and I had this He-Man toy that I would constantly twist and twist and twist. He had old action figures, were a top and a bottom, and I would twist him around where he would eventually, his body would be so twisted up that he would spin really fast. And I thought it was hilarious when he would spin, because his arms would be out and I would make him punch like the shampoo bottles, knock different things off the shelves. Well, one time my little hands were so slippery and I dropped him right when he was spinning. And he grabbed a hold of my penis, like the top of it. My dad was in the Navy and he was gone. And I was screaming bloody murder for my mom. I was like, Mama, you gotta go help me. He-Man's got my pee-pee. And so she comes running into the bathroom, grabs He-Man, takes him off my junk. And my shit is like red and purple. It looked like the serious eggplant emoji. And so she's calling my grandpa, and she says, I think that his junk is messed up. Should I take him to the doctor? And my grandfather, who's the pastor, he was cracking up and he said, no, I think he's going to be fine. There's no reason to. But at that time, there was no way for him to know. Like, she couldn't take pictures on her iPhone and send it to him. He was just going out in the wind, like, oh, yeah, I think it's fine, while she's telling him that it's all swollen. So it was at that point that I knew I could take serious pain in my life and maybe I would be a Marine one day. So that's
how that was the defining moment.
Yeah, that's how it
should be. One bathtub, minor accident, and you decided you were going to be serving our country.
Absolutely.
By the way, after that, I would feel like you'd be scared of bathtubs. Like, how long did it take you to take a bath after that? That would scar a child, you would think.
Well, courage is not the absence of fear, but moving forward in the face of fear.
Oh, gotcha. There it is. See, I would have been like, I'm not getting in that bathtub. I don't want to do it. Like, I'd rather take a shower where I can't have the spinning toy around me.
Yeah, I probably could have gone that way, too. And I'd probably be a cleaner person in general if I did that. Because that's one of the things I hate is when people bring up the fact that you'd probably be cleaner if you took a shower. And I agree. But I would rather be a little bit more relaxed and a little bit more dirty in the bathtub.
See, I am complete opposite. Like, my house in Texas that I have, when I renovated it, I ripped out the bathtub to put in a walk-in shower because I was like, if I want to get in a bath-like thing, I'll just go to the hot tub. Like, I'd rather shower and not be sitting in my own filth.
Yeah, we have two. We have, like, the walk-in shower right by it, which is best of both worlds because I try to time my baths at the same time that my wife is doing a shower. So then it's, like, kind of voyeuristic. It's kind of cool.
Yeah.
It's a nice little plus of building your own
house. You just like wait for her to get in the shower and then you wash your hair bending forward. Like,
yeah.
The visuals I don't need to have right now, I'm having. Thank you very much.
The Pavlovian response to the bells where the dogs start salivating. As soon as I hear the water in the shower, I'm like, you know, I could go for a bath too.
Well, hey, learning things about each other. That's what we're going to do here.
Yeah. So we wanted to talk a little bit about sports too. Let's move into some NFL draft.
What a transition.
It'll be a lot easier to do a transition from these type of topics when we have ads, but this is the first week, so we don't really have any ads this week. Shout out to us.
Well, and like commercials too, like that'll help on the radio. Like, we won't be talking about you getting your junk stuck in a toy going right to the NFL draft, but here we are, so we might as well move forward.
So as a Dallas fan, you lost Dez, you lost a couple other key parts. It doesn't look like Randy Gregory's ever going to be back in the NFL ever again. What are you hoping for your beloved Cowboys?
Well, first of all, I feel like every year the Cowboys, they're with their first pick, always take somebody like, not boring, because that's a bad word, but it's like an offensive lineman or somebody that it's just like there's not a lot of sizzle with. And so to me, I feel like this is going to be the year that there's going to be some sizzle. Now, I don't know which way they're going to go. However, I feel like they just need to get better across the board, but especially on defense. So there's a free safety out of Florida State, and it's Derwin James, that you hear a lot about him right now. I just want to see somebody from a big-time college that can actually really help the defense, because I think Dak's going to be fine. I think Zeke's going to be fine. While I don't like necessarily that there's not a Dez-like person there, he was on his way down. So they're going to find a receiver to play that counterpart. I think I want to see on the defense, and if they need to go free safety, then go free safety.
Were you picking 9? Do you remember off the top of
your head? No, I don't think it's till, like, it's like 19, I don't think. I could be completely wrong on that. Last time I looked, I believe it was like in the teens.
Yeah, Jags picked 29. And I was reading a mock draft by old Peter King. And I used to
mock drafts.
And I feel like this year is the first year that my beloved Jags have been outside of the top 5 in damn near a decade. I think 9 years we've been like in and around the top 5. And so we're at the very end of the draft. So I haven't paid nearly as much attention to it at all. But whenever you're that far down, you realize how little major people who cover the draft all the time know about individual teams. And maybe it's just the Jags. Like, Peter King said that the Jags should target a wide receiver because they don't have any wide receivers. Well, they brought in Dante Moncrief. They have Dede Westbrook. They have Marquise Lee. They have Cole, who was a rookie last year. So they have really 4 people who can play pretty deeply. And they don't even mention offensive tackle. They don't have a swing tackle. They don't have a linebacker. Just the idea of this draft industry being a multi-billion dollar industry at this point. And the main people who don't cover it don't know shit when you look at it as a fan who actually watches every single move of your team.
Well, yeah, and on top of that, like the media hype around a lot of these guys. Like if you look at just the quarterbacks that are in this draft, and I'm totally going to do a shameless plug here. We'll have Johnny Manziel on a podcast coming out tomorrow talking about a lot of those guys. But like there are a bunch of experts that are all like, this is my for sure number one quarterback that's going off the board. And they're all different answers, or they don't know if it's going to be the number one overall draft pick or whatever it may be. So unless you're a super fan of a team or you're a media member who covers that team day in and day out, it's a crapshoot. Like you can hear things from people. Sources can tell you like, oh, we think that Baker Mayfield should be the number one overall pick. And then you go to the next website and somebody will be like, oh no, Baker Mayfield's going to fall out of the first round. So it is. It's a complete crapshoot. And that's why as a Cowboys fan, you look and you see like they take, oh, an offensive guard. And everybody kind of is like, eh, like wish there was a sexier pick. But they probably know they need that offensive guard more than they need somebody with a flashy name. So it's the draft. Everybody just guesses and usually is wrong.
And I get caught up in the hype. I love Baker Mayfield. I love what he brings. I love that swagger. When I was growing up, my favorite player was Deion Sanders. So anybody,
nice pick.
So anybody that's just complete asshole on the field or cocky as fuck, I liked him. There's a video of me on YouTube being very depressed whenever the Jags announced that they were picking Blake Bortles instead of Johnny Manziel. I wanted Manziel just because of that attitude. I thought it would have been amazing to have him on my team. I still would like him as a backup. We need a really good backup, Johnny. Let him know, Casey. Come on down to Julie. We will take
I will. I'll let him know the next time we're talking on the podcast that you, Uncle Chaps, are trying to get him down to Jacksonville. I feel like that's an endorsement that everybody needs.
I would love to have him down there. But Baker Mayfield, I feel him and Josh Allen, whenever you talk about all these single players at the top of the draft and everyone says, like the article today, it said, don't be surprised if Baker Mayfield goes over number one overall and Josh Allen drops. Basically, that's admitting you don't know shit when you say
yeah.
that. You don't know who's going to go number one. And I actually like that a lot better than the days that Peyton Manning was told days in advance or Andrew Luck knew days in advance that he was going to be picked. These guys have no idea where they're going and nobody's saying anything. It makes the draft process a lot more exciting.
Yeah, it does. And if you talk to a lot of those guys and not just, you know, high profile people like Johnny, but just in general, the guys that may be in the first round, that may fall into the second, there's a lot of game playing with these teams. They like the teams make them think, oh, we're going to take you because they're trying to get other teams to move up. It's all just kind of a chess game internally. And media members don't know when that's going to happen. The only people that know that are in those war rooms. But it's fun to watch. It's also not fun to see a break on social media. Like, I almost wish that all social media could just be taken out for on at least the first night of the draft. Because I think it's so fun to watch, like, when Roger Goodell goes up and gets booed and the whole thing and whatever else. But you usually know what's going to happen on social media because there's rats inside those war rooms.
I hate it, too. And it's NFL Network.
It takes me the excitement.
Are, like, not doing it. They're not tipping picks. But motherfuckers from like CBS or wherever, NBC, are still going to do it. So what's the point of ESPN and NFL Network not doing it if everybody else does? They should take everybody else's credentials, kick them out of there, and everybody has to watch it unfold on TV. I would love that.
I would too. It'd be really fun. But I actually do like the first night of the draft a lot, even though you usually know what's going to happen. I like to see kind of the fan aspect as well. And it is in Arlington this year. It's at the Cowboys stadium. So that should be fun.
Yeah, I think that'll be a good environment for it.
It's going to be the Eagles are going to boo. Yeah. The Eagles are going to be.
The Eagles
they are going to boo.
Their pick as the world champion Eagles in Dallas Stadium is, man.
I know. It's going to be tough. Like, and as somebody who covered the Patriots last year in Boston and as a Dallas Cowboys fan, I really hate the Philadelphia Eagles this year. It's going to be tough to watch. Hate to see it.
Well, make sure you check out Casey's podcast with Johnny Manziel. It drops on draft day, so you'll have a good primer for somebody who's been through the process, and Johnny's going to have an amazing amount of stories to tell throughout that time in the podcast. It's going to be continuing on, right, Casey? It's going to be continuing on?
As of right now, that's to be determined.
To be determined. Who?
Well, it depends. If he gets picked up by an NFL team, then obviously that comes first. Unfortunately, I'd like Barstool to always be first with everybody, but we've got to see what's going to happen with him. And, you know, the comeback season is a real thing that's happening, so maybe he'll be in an NFL jersey soon.
All right, Bren, well, let's kick that smooth, sultry voice of young Aaron Neville because we're going to move into a little romance time. It's time for a little romance. Let's listen to Aaron sing us into the next segment. Oh. right, so everybody that listens to Barstool Sports or reads Barstool Sports knows I'm a huge romance guy. I love the stories of romance. I love to kick it to the heartstrings. Are absolutely content. Casey does too. Casey has some great advice for you. And I wanted to kick it off and start off with one little letter. Now, Casey doesn't know the stories that I'm going to select for us to talk about.
You're surprising me. You're just totally springing it on me here.
So we want to see, kind of set the stage a little bit of how we feel. So let me read the story first. I've been in a relationship with my boyfriend for about 18 months, and we have been having unprotected sex for our entire relationship. My boyfriend called me yesterday saying he spent the entire afternoon in an STI clinic and that he has genital anal warts. Obviously, I'm shocked as to how, and he said he had them since before we got together and just didn't say anything. I asked if we could meet up and talk about it, and he says he just wants to be alone since he's only communicated with me via text. He won't even answer the phone. When we first started seeing each other, we had both agreed to checkups, and we did mine, he did his, and he just lied to me for 18 months. I obviously feel furious that he never mentioned this till now, and we've shared some heating texts, and he's not coming across as a little bit remorseful. I'm in a predicament because my body and health are very important to me. I'm super healthy, in great shape, and putting effort into looking after myself. On the other hand, I feel very discouraged by him and can't keep my head around his mentality in this situation. Up until this, we've had such a smooth, happy adult relationship, and I don't know where to go from here. I thought he had more respect for me and higher more than this. What do I do?
That's, first of all, what year was this written?
This one is very current. This was like 7 hours ago.
This is very current. Yeah. Oh, 7 hours ago. Oh, like, I didn't know if you like to pull them out from like 1991, like out of like books and newspapers. So this is like a real thing that's on the internet.
That'll be your second question, yeah.
This can't be, like, this person, this girl cannot be serious.
She is.
Can't be.
And she's going back and forth with these people over and over and over again. She's completely serious.
And let me guess, everybody that's commenting is saying, drop his ass, never speak to him again. Like I think it's a felony. I mean, I don't know what it, like, I know that herpes, so I'm assuming that he had herpes. Isn't it a felony to know that you have that and purposely be spreading it?
I feel like there's two things that you have to really tell somebody if you're in a relationship with them.
Herpes.
One, if you've ever been divorced, I feel like that should come up pretty quickly if you've been divorced. Two, if you have anal warts. I feel like anal warts.
I'm like cringing at that.
On the list.
Cringing.
You can't just let anal warts slide. And how does it know? He doesn't know that they have anal warts. Like, even if you don't do ass play, they've done ass play before because they have anal warts. Like, that's proof positive number one. So if they say they don't, they're lying. They do.
I feel as though, like, I would switch those. Like, I understand people get divorced all the time. Like, eventually, yes, I'd like to know. Like, if I'm going to be in a serious relationship with somebody, yes, I do need to know you've been divorced. Like, maybe there's a crazy person that's going to come after me. I don't know. I would put that pretty far down the line after anal warts. Like,
so
I can't.
Anal warts number one, divorce number two.
Yeah, or any disease. Because here's the thing, it's like you could be divorced and like there could be either a really sad story or an amicable story or whatever. Like, it might not affect me whatsoever as a relationship. Yeah, it might, but like anal warts, like I feel like that's something that you just don't like skim over. Like, oh, I completely forgot to tell you I have anal warts. Like, that's not something.
I did notice that you were always squirming around in your seat. Yeah, because you can't sit comfortably because you have a cauliflower head of anal warts on your butthole.
That makes me want to absolutely barf. Like that, I cannot believe that you just described it as that. Like, I'm actually having a hard time looking at you right now. Like, I can't look at you.
That is the grossest thing
I have ever heard.
Anal warts number one. Divorce number two. I feel that's fair. How do you feel about taxes? If they're back, if they have back taxes. Or do you put that in the, like, right sandwich right in the middle, like the ice cream or the cookie sandwich?
I can't look at you. I'd like to go on record and say that any type of disease, especially anally, I mean, it doesn't really matter at all. Any type of disease is first. I just, I feel like I'm going to pass out because I'm so grossed out by that.
All right, well, let's move on to the second story. This one comes from us live from 1967. It is courtesy of our friend Dear Abby, longtime stoolie Dear Abby. She says she gets a letter from somebody in Syracuse, and she says, "My husband doesn't just snore. It's a combination of things that he does with his nose, throat, and teeth. Besides that, he steps on the brakes all night. I finally sent him to an ear, nose, and throat specialist with orders to do something, or else. Guess what the doctor told him? Look, if I knew a cure for snoring, I'd use it myself. I'm the world's worst. My husband refused to go on vacation with me unless we take two rooms on separate floors. Help me, please." There's a part in there that I wanted to touch on because 1967 is so beautiful. The fact that she referred to this dude farting at night as pumping the brakes or stomping on the brakes just makes me long for those days in a simpler time.
Like when everything had to sound so much better than it actually is.
So, I mean,
like there's no way that like back then they were like you don't call things what they are, but you not only don't call them what they are, you have to like class them up. Like you have to like make them sound like nothing is wrong whatsoever.
Yeah. Oh, stepped on a frog. Because what do you do? I mean, now if you were going to write that, my wife would just be like, "Dear Abby, my husband's ripping fucking mad ass. What do I do?"
I mean, like, there's also, like, again, like, I know these people, like, now can sit down at their computer and their phone. And, like, you and I have talked about this before, like, 1967, or I mean, really up until the last, like, two decades, like, they had to sit down at either a typewriter or take a pen and paper to send these letters in. Like, there is a woman in 1967 who was so disturbed by what was happening in her relationship, she took out a pen and stationery and mailed it to ask Abby how to deal with flatulence in her relationship and snoring.
Her husband was farting so much that she was licking stamps. Like, licking stamps.
Like getting hand cramps, like writing. That's not a short little letter. Like, that, it just baffles me. And it's, I mean, that's just the way that it was. Like, it's like people couldn't just sit down and, you know, blog something in 2 minutes or whatever. But it's just funny. Like, she was so disturbed by that.
That's
she
way.
Had to get a hand cramp about it.
Yep. That's the way it was. And that's the way this podcast is going to be. We hope you liked the first one. We'll see you Monday night starting at 10 to midnight on the East Coast. We can't wait to spend our evenings with you and your mornings with us. When you listen to the podcast, it'll be right here in this feed. Bye, haters.
Bye, haters. Oh, baby, give me one more chance.